Let's take item 1033, please.
Amend City Code to revise process, investigation, and appeal provisions of complaints of police officer misconduct.
Madam Auditor.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I am City Auditor Mary Hall Caballero. Constantine Severe and I are here today with a proposal to amend City Code Chapters 3.20 and 3.21, which govern the police accountability system. Mr. Severe is the Director of Independent Police Review in my office. Taken together, the changes we are proposing improve the overall quality and integrity of the oversight system and make it more efficient, effective, and equitable. They move the city closer to its desired outcomes by realigning responsibilities within the entities that investigate police officer misconduct allegations, streamlining the existing process to enable cases to move through it more efficiently, and enabling community members who have filed complaints to appear before the police bureau's internal review board. They are also responsive to terms included in the city's settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice. In May 2015, Director Severe and I attended a meeting along with representatives of the police bureau in which justice officials made clear that the city's attempts to comply with accountability provisions in the agreement had fallen short of their expectations. They wanted the city to reduce its dismissal rate by investigating more complaints. They also preferred that investigators assigned to a case had the authority to provide an opinion on whether officers had violated police bureau policy. Both recommendations are included in these proposed changes. Other changes are related to how the Citizen Review Committee is organized to meet its wide-ranging responsibilities. 11 community volunteers serve on the committee, which is an advisory body to my office and to the police commissioner. City Code expects much of them. They are required to conduct a minimum of 4 meetings per year, participate in various community meetings to hear concerns about police services, make policy recommendations to elected officials and city staff, advise on operations, hear appeals, raise awareness in the community about the oversight system, and participate in work groups to address short-term issues and needs. Committee members rightfully and repeatedly have expressed concerns about the workload placed on them. The committee's focus of late has been mostly consumed with hearing appeals of community members who disagree with how their cases were decided within the police bureau. Time spent preparing for an appeal and the hearing itself leaves few options for the volunteers to meet their other committee responsibilities. The city has also been unable to meet its obligation in the agreement to have appeals heard within 21 days. We are experiencing an increase in appeal requests, and the current backlog extends to next June. To balance time demands on volunteers while increasing the frequency of hearings, this proposal authorizes cases to be heard by 3-member panels instead of the full committee. Volunteers would be assigned to 6 or 7 appeal dates in a year, freeing up time for participation in work groups and community outreach activities. The city is obligated to ensure a sound accountability system that will hold up under review. It also should provide authentic opportunities for public input on matters of policy. The current practice of combining appeal hearings with other items on the committee's monthly agenda ill serves the city's ability to deliver on both of these obligations. In addition to scheduling appeal hearings separate from other committee business, we propose reserving public comment for general meetings when the full committee is present. This will ensure that for appeals, the city can protect an officer's right to a fair and expedient process and keep the committee's focus on the appellant's immediate particular concerns. The point of the hearing is for committee members to assess whether an investigation was thorough and the findings were reasonable based on the evidence. The appeal becomes part of a record that may subsequently be reviewed during grievance or civil service proceedings. It is reasonable to expect that a police chief or an arbitrator would question how certain comments affected an appeal, which could put a disciplinary decision in jeopardy. Public input in this context is misplaced. Audience members are not allowed access to the contents of a case file, so it is not uncommon for comments to be off-topic or emotionally charged. This presents a challenge for keeping order in the hearing and maintaining focus on the case at hand. It also seems to leave audience members frustrated when issues they want to discuss appear to be unwelcome. Their input is important, but this is not the appropriate venue to receive it. Public comment is best suited for general meetings when all committee members are present and robust discussions of ideas or concerns about police services and accountability can be welcomed. The full committee is better positioned to take in and respond to public comment and decide if it warrants further attention by a work group or referral to an elected official or city staff. From a management perspective, this proposal addresses some challenges and creates others. It streamlines and strengthens police accountability as required by the settlement agreement. It alleviates some of the workload from individual citizen review committee members and reduces the length of appeals, which benefits all participants. It reserves time for the committee to focus solely on appellants' concerns in one venue and matters of general public concern in another. It also helps us predict, plan for, and control costs for security protection, which have increased in recent months. At the same time, this proposal shifts responsibilities and workload within the police bureau and my office, which has been adapting to rapid change and growth in recent years. It increases the number of night meetings city staff members must prepare for and attend each month, which for my staff at least shifts responsibilities and workload associated with their young children to their spouses. We will need to monitor these changes and make adjustments as needed once we have some experience with this new process. That said, these changes reflect what I believe is the best approach to achieve many positive results given the constraints of time, resources, and political will. And now I'm going to turn it over to Director Sevier to walk you through the code provisions that we're proposing to amend.
Okay. Good afternoon, Council members, Mr. Mayor. My name is Constantine Sevier, Director of the Independent Police Review. So I'm going to walk you through the changes in Chapter 321 and 320.140. So just a bit of kind of a, let's say, a 50,000-foot view of why we're moving forward with these particular code changes right now. Over the last year or so, IPR, other folks within the city have met with community members, have discussed the needed changes internally. Have had two public forums, one on August 1st and the other on August 23rd. And in trying to summarize some of the statements that I've heard from community members and trying to incorporate that in the code changes, there are about four or five different values that I heard and kind of impacted me. The first is that community complaints are important and they are a direct feedback mechanism to getting accountability. As we all know, IPR has a relatively high dismissal rate, and part of the dismissal rate is based on the standard that was set for IPR when city code was created around IPR in 2001. And that was a code based on looking at misconduct. What we're trying to move our accountability system to is a true accountability system. That's going to be reflected in some of the stuff that I talk about a little bit later about having a two-tiered track for allegations of officer misconduct, of having cases that are best situated with an officer supervisor being done as supervisory investigation, and more serious cases like use of force, bias-based policing, significant inappropriate or abusive authority by officers being subject to full administrative investigations. The other value is that the accountability system has to be fair and reflective of the values of the community. And the CRC members and the committee as itself, I think, is a testament of our community's values and how proud we can be of how much the CRC has provided the city. The members put in an inordinate amount of time to prepare for each case. The case files have gotten bigger over the years that I've worked in the city. I've worked in the city 8 years. And there's a recent case where the CRC members had to review several hundred pages of an investigation, hours of video testimony before they could come in at 5:30 in the evening and spend about 4 or 5 hours on one case. So it's important that we cherish the CRC and respect the work that they put in. The other part is that our accountability system must be able to withstand outside scrutiny, whether that is the Department of Justice, whether that is an arbitrator when an officer is subject to discipline and it goes through the grievance process. There is a lot about Portland where we do things a little bit differently, and our oversight system is that as well. There's a lot of experimentation that's incorporated within our oversight system. When you look at it nationally, it's a hybrid model, includes some auditing function, includes some investigative and some monitoring functions. So in drafting the code changes and in working in the internal and mixed community and city work groups, some of the things that were incorporated were some best practices developed by the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement and the International Chiefs of Police. And also looking at comparable agencies, there are nowadays several cities around our size that have oversight mechanisms. So the city of Denver, city of Austin, cities around that have around 500 to 750,000 people, and Seattle as well. And taking a look of how they do it and see if there's approaches that they have that we can incorporate in our city. So how was this code change developed? Some community feedback. IPR should kind of articulate better what kind of cases it investigates. Feedback from the DOJ, the auditor mentioned some of it. All complaints investigated. Lower dismissal rate. The investigative agency, whether that is IPR or internal affairs, provide a recommended finding. The accountability focus group, which was a group composed of city staff and members of the community. There's a member from the Citizen Review Committee, a member of the Police Review Board, and a member from the Albina Ministerial Alliance, as well as a peer officer member. Some of the concept that came up from the accountability focus group were providing a mechanism for quality of service and rudeness complaints, which we've called supervisory investigations, and also providing greater flexibility in the appeal review process. And there were three different ideas that we discussed. The accountability group decided to forward those three as basically a package to council for its determination. One was having an administrative law judge hear appeals. That is something that the city of Denver does, and it's very efficient. It is very quick. It is also something that is open to the public in Denver and based on Colorado law. Having the CRC meet in panels, in three-person panels for them to hear an appeal and review that. And the final option was a consolidated review board, which has been subject to a lot of discussion in the last 6 to 8 weeks. There was a lot of things that recommended the consolidated review board as a way to go forward. It would combine, I believe, the best aspects of the police review board with what the CRC does in the appeal context. The biggest negative to it, from what I've heard from the public, was the ability for members of the public to actually view what was going on, given the requirements of Oregon public records law and the ability of members of the public to view disciplinary cases being adjudicated. So a little further step back, one of the things about our accountability system, it is a work in progress. Over the last 15 years, there have been four significant code changes, and that doesn't even include things that occurred in the 80s and 90s with the creation of PIAC, which was the predecessor agency of IPR, and that heard appeals of misconduct cases completed by internal affairs. But 2001, IPR and CRC were created. In 2010, there was a significant code change that created the Police Review Board, allowed IPR for the first time to self-initiate investigations, authorized IPR to monitor officer-involved shootings and custody deaths. So IPR's ability to go to the scene of an officer-involved shooting in custody death started with that particular legislation. It recommended that the police bureau implement a discipline guide, and it formalized in code IPR's ability to approve or review and make a decision whether to approve all police bureau administrative investigations and findings. Following the 2010 code change, there was a stakeholder committee convened by council, which met for several months and provided the city with a significant amount of recommendations, several of which have been implemented. There are still some items from the stakeholder committee that have not been implemented by the city for a variety of reasons, and I'll touch on some of that a little bit later. The next big change is the Department of Justice's settlement agreement, or the settlement agreement with the Department of Justice, which was approved by council in 2012. Following that, there was another code change in 2013, which implemented several provisions that within the settlement agreement that involved the Citizen Review Committee and the Police Review Board. The CRC was expanded to 11 members. The discipline guide was required. CRC members became rotating members of the Police Review Board in force cases. In 2014, the settlement agreement was finally signed off on by Judge Simon and went into effect. The Police Bureau implemented a discipline guide. And in 2015, there were additional code changes which modified CRC's case file review process and appeal procedures. So the Department of Justice settlement agreement that we're talking about is just Section 8, which is a relatively narrow part of the agreement, but obviously a very important one. And it covers the city, and within the city is the Police Bureau, IPR, and CRC, as well as the PRB. And one of the things that the settlement agreement talks about, and I think has kind of driven whether you're part of the Department of Justice or people within the city, is to seek to retain and strengthen the citizen and civilian employee input mechanisms that existed prior to the agreement. So unlike in some settlement agreements or consent decrees where the Department of Justice wants something completely brand new, the Department of Justice and the city saw value in what existed prior to the existence of the settlement agreement. And what we've done over the last 5 or so years since the Department of Justice has entered Portland is try to build significant accountability mechanisms within our particular system. There are several provisions within Section 8 that are important, but the three critical ones, at least for what we're doing tonight and going forward on these code changes, are paragraph 121, which is that all administrative investigations have to be completed within 180 days and that CRC appeals should be completed within 21 days. And the 21 days is from receipt of a notice that an appellant wants to file an appeal with IPR. Paragraph 123 is that the city must come together and develop an action plan when there are delays in complying with the conditions of the agreement. And paragraph 128, IPR must have the ability to conduct meaningful independent investigations into officer misconduct. So prior to 2013, IPR in its then 12-year history had never completed an officer misconduct investigation. So that was something that the Department of Justice noted, and the city, to its credit, has taken a number of steps to allow IPR to do independent investigations. This council has supported IPR in providing us with enough staff. We've gone from having 2.5 investigators in 2013 to having budgeted 7 investigators. For the 2015-2016 budget year, we initiated at least, and some of them are still ongoing, 17 administrative investigations. So again, the continuing theme that you'll hear from me is that it is a work in progress and that we are ultimately working towards a goal of making sure that community members and Portland Police Bureau officers feel confident that there's an administrative investigation process that includes both civilians and bureau members that is fair and expeditious. So some of the things that the code changes do not touch, and there are several, and some of them are issues that community members have brought up for a number of years that are of pretty significant, particularly with IPR. One thing or several things that I hear often is there are several members of the community who want IPR to be able to investigate officer-involved shootings and custody deaths. That is something that we are not allowed to do per the collective bargaining agreement that the city has with the Portland Police Association. Again, with the being able to compel officer testimony, so the way it works right now is that if IPR wants to interview an officer, which we do with some frequency nowadays, we have a liaison with Internal Affairs, and Internal Affairs works very well with us, and that they are a significant help and never impeded any of our investigations. But several community members have brought up over the years that they feel that IPR should be able to directly compel an officer to testify, and that is something that would need to be bargained between the city and the PPA. Some other issues that have been brought up by community members that we are not touching in this particular code change is the CRC standard review. The CRC's current standard review is the reasonable person standard. Several folks have brought up that they would prefer that if the CRC had a preponderance of the evidence standard, kind of the normal standard for a fact finder. The CRC, as envisioned in city code, works as an appeal body. And another issue that's involved with the standard review in particular is the city is obligated under Department of Justice settlement agreement to reduce redundancies and any significant sources of delay. When you look at the standard review and given what the Police Review Board does, which is a advisory body to the chief on disciplinary type cases, changing the standard review from the current standard review to preponderance of the evidence would basically create two fact-finding bodies within one administrative investigation process. One of the attempts to try to deal with that, at least in our work in looking at our accountability system from when a community member files a complaint to an appeal, was the consolidated model, which would have, again, like I said earlier, provide a lot of the strengths from both the PRB and the CRC. Increasing the size of the Citizen Review Committee, I've heard different numbers. I've heard 15. I've heard some other numbers. From a logistics standpoint of currently IPR staffs, all CRC meetings, and the ability to attract community members to serve on the CRC, we just ran through our most recent recruitment, and in the last 5 years, it was the least amount of community members who went through the process, who volunteered to want to serve on the Citizen Review Committee. And so being able to maintain a 15-member board, I would have significant doubts. I don't really have a real opinion about that, at least at this time, but that would be a significant logistics issue for the city to moving forward if we increase the size. Removing the conference hearing, which is when the CRC hears an appeal and votes to challenge a police bureau finding, and the chief receives that finding or receives that challenge from the CRC, and the chief and the CRC do not agree. There is a conference hearing that is held for the chief and the CRC to be able to discuss their differences and see if there's some sort of resolution that is possible. That is something that does add time to our system, generally at least 30 days. Taking that out would mean that those appeals, once they went from the CRC, in particularly in the context of a challenge, they would go to council. They would be like the previous hearing, where council would make the ultimate decision.
Mr. Spira, I appreciate you going through the anticipated concerns that people might bring up. Given the late hour, it might be good to see what the public has to say and then have you explain why you didn't do what you did after that, if it's a way to do that.
Indeed. So I've already discussed the Consolidated Review Board, so I, in the interest of time, will not go further into that. So next slide. So 321.110, that is the intake section, and the purpose of that particular portion of the revised code is to provide alternate means for community members to file complaints about possible officer misconduct, and that the police bureau would provide complaint forms within police facilities, which happens now more or less, but I think codifying it and making sure that it's actually implemented, I think, would improve the access that community members have to the city's services. The investigative tracks, basically, in a nutshell, that would create a formal administrative investigation process and a supervisory investigation process. One of the tensions in crafting an accountability system, particularly in the context of Portland, on a per capita basis, and you see this in other West Coast cities, there are more complaints here than, let's say, in a Newark or a New York City per capita, and I'm not exactly sure why that is, but a part of it is there's less hurdles for people to file complaints in the city of Portland. We take all complaints. That has been a value that we've tried to incorporate. So we take all complaints and trying to make sure that we adequately address all the community members' issues has been a challenge over time. And having a supervisory investigation track in particular that would allow a supervisor to be able to directly contact a community member and the involved member and have a disposition attached, I believe would be something that would, one, allow us to address relatively minor concerns in a faster way than formal administrative investigations. The supervisory investigations is similar to our current service improvement opportunity, which roughly takes 60 to 70 days as opposed to a formal administrative investigation, where those generally take about 140 to 180 days. 321.110 would require better notification. So when there's a situation where there's a concern about officer behavior that may be subject to criminal or administrative investigation, that the IPR director would be notified. So that would, and that requirement would fall upon the Assistant Chief of Investigations, the Captain of Professional Standards Division, and the police commissioner's staff. The ability of IPR to request that the police bureau open deadly force investigations in cases where a bureau member used force capable of causing death or serious physical injury, and that IPR receive from the bureau any force-related after-action reports where it's believed that members' actions were out of policy. And these provisions are really in the interest of time. There's a lot of really good interaction between IPR and the police bureau on these types of cases. But in the interest of making sure that the city is able to address possible misconduct by officers in the most timely manner, it's important that IPR receive notification in as quick of a manner as possible. Recommended findings. This would be a change from the current process where the officer's commander does recommended findings. So it'd be the investigative agency, whether that's Internal Affairs or IPR, we would be tasked with doing the recommended finding. And at IPR, the persons doing the findings would be one of the supervisors. At IPR, all the supervisors are attorneys with either significant criminal law background or administrative law background. And the investigative agency doing the recommended findings, that's something that you see in a number of cities that are comparable to Portland, Seattle, Albuquerque, Atlanta. There's some other things that would need to happen to make this fully operational, but the first part of this is having it changed in code. In 321, the Citizen Review Committee appeals would allow the CRC to be able to meet in panels to hear appeals. Right now, the quorum for the CRC to meet is 5. The quorum would be reduced to 3. And public comment would be reserved for non-appeal CRC meetings. 320-140, it would allow the complainant to be able to be present and have a statement at board sessions, which does not occur now. And that is the end of my presentation.
Okay, thank you both very much. Let's take testimony, please.
23 people signed up. The first three, please come on up. Dr. T. Allen Bethel, Dan Handelman, and Debbie Iona. Then after them, I have Kimberly McCullough, Mark Kramer, and Khalil Edwards. Sorry. Thank you. And then Shannon Kogan would be in the next group.
Good evening, welcome.
Good evening. Dr. T. Allen Bethel, President of Alabama Minister Alliance, serving as co-chair of Alabama Minister Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today and share some comments around the proposed changes for the CRC and IPR process as slated and asked us to do by the who are we talking about? The DOJ, of all people. I know my time is ticking.
Sorry.
I will stay within it as soon as I find the last piece of what I'm supposed to be doing.
Would it be helpful if somebody else spoke while you find it?
Yes, President Dan, are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's do that, Dr. Bethel. We'll have Mr. Handelman go ahead, and then we'll return to you. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mayor. My name is Dan Handelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch. And Portland Cop Watch applauds the city's decision to keep police misconduct appeal hearings public. But the current proposal has too many flaws to let it move forward. We strenuously object to the proposal to silence community input during hearings. CRC is not only capable of separating facts from opinions, but the existing ordinance directs them to hear any evidence offered, saying they must consider evidence only from the investigation when deciding on the findings. The city attorney admitted that the police association has never filed a grievance based on public comments at a CRC hearing. The community has the same case summary paperwork as the appellant and the officer. Does the city plan to prohibit those parties from speaking at the appeals too? The way the ordinance is written, CRC would have to call a special meeting to take public input and might be prohibited from taking input at their regular meetings. Public comment helps CRC on community context, policy, training, and their own protocols. The last case at CRC benefited from comments. After it was pointed out they were using an old directive, they changed their recommendation on a taser use using the correct directive. Silencing the community will only lead to more disruptions rather than less. Meanwhile, breaking the 11-member panel into 3-person panels will create a number of problems. In terms of diversity, with the current committee of 7 women and 4 men, with 4 persons of color, it's likely some panels will be all female and white. CopWatch suggests expanding CRC to 15 members and tapping into the 20-member Police Review Board civilian pool to round out 7-member panels, specifically with 4 CRC members and 3 PRB members with a quorum of 5. If one of the 3 CRC members becomes ill, the appeal will have to be delayed, leading to appeals taking much longer than the proposed 21 days. If CRC sends a case back for more investigation, the same 3 members will have to be available for the supplemental hearing, or else others have to read the case file and listen to a recording from the first hearing. In the last 2 years, CRC has met 16 times to consider just 8 appeals, because 3 cases were poorly investigated and 2 led to conference hearings. And the conference hearing provision to allow the chief to come back to CRC if he or she disagrees with their finding.
I'm going to grant each of these panelists some additional time because each of their organizations has put a lot of time into these issues. So go ahead, Dan.
I appreciate it, Mayor Hills. The conference hearing causes more unnecessary delays and it should be removed, and disputed cases should go back to City Council. And we have other members of CopWatch who are going to round out my testimony. But I just want to say this point that was made about the Police Review Board and the CRC being duplicative. In our records, of the last 20 appeals that were heard since that code change was implemented, we could only find 2 where the case was heard both at the Police Review Board and the CRC. So it's very rare that happens, and you can take steps we can discuss later about how to make it so that a case wouldn't end up going to both places.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Dr. Bethel, you ready to proceed?
Thank you. Yes. The Albino Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform requests that the City Council modify the proposed changes to the IPR, CRC, and the Police Review Board, or delay voting until amendments or other changes can be made. The settlement agreement with the Department of Justice speaks to the need of correcting the Byzantine accountability system currently in place. Let's not rush, but seek to install a truly more simpler accountability and review process. The coalition has some serious concerns about eliminating the community's voice at the Citizen Review Committee appeal hearings. To eliminate the community voice, we believe, flies in the face of community engagement and involvement, a goal we are all working towards, and for greater transparency, rebuilding trust and community engagement. The community voice should be welcome and valued in the process. The coalition also has concerns about three-member panels for the CRC. Even though the full CRC is chosen carefully to represent some of the diversity our city has to offer, only using 3 of 11 members creates the likelihood that the smaller panel will not offer that diversity inclusive of age, race, gender, and lived experience. The AMC also is concerned that the proposal to change the oversight system is going forward while the Community Oversight Advisory Board is in recess. The settlement agreement authorizes that board to seek ways to improve community input and weigh in on accountability matters. COAB was working on its own proposal for the IPR-CRC system when they were placed on hiatus. We request that their input be reviewed and adopted in the and their changes where applicable. The coalition has had a long history of offering input to City Council on changes we want to see to the system, including giving IPR the ability to compel officer testimony. These recommendations date back to our earliest incarnation after the death of Kendra James in 2003. We offered similar recommendations as a member of the 2010 Oversight Stakeholder Committee convened by the city. In our community demands issued after the death of Aaron Campbell and in our proposals to improve the DOJ settlement agreement. In this post-Ferguson America, it would be a mistake to take steps backwards on allowing community to be a part of community oversight and to reduce the diversity of the people examining alleged police misconduct. We hope you will modify or delay this proposal until it has been fully vetted and meets community expectations, moving us closer to the goal of justice, accountability, transparency, and community engagement. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Zana? I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League has a longstanding interest in the city's police oversight system, and we believe transparency and public participation are of utmost importance. We are very concerned about both the process used to develop the current proposal and some of its provisions. We urge you to appoint a task force charged with taking a more thoughtful and inclusive look at the complaint process and CRC's role in it. Council is being presented with a proposal without the analysis needed to truly understand the many factors that contribute to lengthy appeals. CRC's right to request additional investigation and the time it takes to schedule a conference hearing between the chief and the CRC to discuss disagreements over findings are just two examples of why the 21-day timeline is unrealistic. The League is troubled by the proposed elimination of public comment at appeal hearings. As regular CRC meeting attendees, we have observed that in the vast majority of cases, public comment has been constructive and respectful. The city attorney cited a fear that the involved officer might file a grievance if the public continues to comment. This has never happened in CRC's 15-year history. 20 minutes of public comment does not contribute to delays. Therefore, we see no reason to cut the community out of the process. Furthermore, Daryl Turner recently stated that the union has no problem with public input as long as it is delivered respectfully. The community deserves a thorough explanation of what is motivating the proposed changes and why they focus on excluding the public when public participation is not delaying the process. There are some positive features in the proposal, such as reducing the number of dismissed complaints, giving the agency conducting the complaint investigation the authority to draft findings, and allowing the complainant to attend the police review board hearing. A task force could
explore options for supporting the complainant in light of the potential intimidating nature of a hearing room dominated by police bureau officials. Again, we urge you to step back and create a process where these issues can be thoughtfully discussed. And then finally, I just wondered, since I think the number of people have had to leave because, you know, it's kind of late, if you would consider continuing in the hearing so they can have an opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Yeah, good suggestion. Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, let's take the next three folks, please.
Are Kimberly McCullough, Mark Kramer, and Shannon Cogan. And they'll be followed by T.J. Brown, Philip Coca, and Dr. W.G. Barnett.
Welcome. Good evening.
Mayor Hills and members of the commission, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm the legislative director at ACLU of Oregon. Although the proposed ordinance covers a number of things, we're just here to comment on two specific concerns that we have. The first you've already heard about, which is the proposal that public comment be taken out of case file reviews and appeal hearings. As we all know, the purpose of the CRC is to build public trust and to provide a window for the public to problem solve issues of police accountability. And a very important aspect of that is the identification of policies that need to change. So that public comment opportunity at the time that these specific issues are being discussed is a very good opportunity for that. It helps that process. And we think that taking that away would really contravene that purpose. You know, if the suggestion is that the public doesn't have enough information to comment, then, and I'm not saying that that's the case, but if that's the suggestion, then the public should be given more information, not taken away the opportunity to comment. If the concern is that people make irrelevant comments, well, the same thing could be said for city council hearings. And we all know that despite the fact that it may be inconvenient to sometimes listen to irrelevant comments, it does play a very important role in our democracy. And then if the suggestion is that it may inappropriately influence the CRC members, I think they can simply be given proper instructions.
Ms. McCullough, the difference is we're paid to listen to irrelevant comments. The CRC members are not.
That may be true. But that certainly doesn't mean that it's not an important public forum where this information needs to be heard.
Fair enough. Let her continue, please.
The second concern that we have is about the reduction of the CRC to panels of three. ACLU of Oregon participated in 2010 in the Police Oversight Stakeholder Committee, which recommended increasing the size of the CRC from 9 to 11 members. And that change was recommended to increase the diversity of the CRC. And we're just concerned that reducing to three members would really potentially damage the diversity of those individual panels. We are not opposed to the idea of panels, but three-member panels just seem far too small. So those are our comments, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Novick, I represent the National Lawyers Guild. We've been around the block on this issue. Personally, I've been part of the Mayor Katz Task Force in 2000 and the 2010 Police Stakeholder Committee. We do support the League's proposal for a stakeholder group or a task force to examine this issue more broadly. We are concerned with the lack of transparency, particularly the lack of informed input by COAB into this proposal. So this is a time of opportunity, and I urge you not to rush. We oppose the proposal in its current form. In particular, we oppose the elimination of public comment at the CRC meetings. We are frustrated by the failure of the proposal to incorporate what we have been asking for a number of years, both in front of Mayor Katz and in 2010. So I just want to list those to you briefly, because this should be part of the agenda of where we should go from here, which is a stakeholder process. The issue about the IPR having the power to compel officer independently, which is what they don't have now. The definition of evidence, whether we're going to use preponderance of the evidence or the reasonable person standard. The ability, and this is very important, for IPR to conduct review of deadly force allegations, independent investigations of deadly force, and deaths in custody. And that the system apply to all complaints. So this should be part of this process. We are concerned that if we use this limited window of opportunity to pass this proposal, we will foreclose meaningful reform, because as we know, these things are not considered every month or every year. We're also concerned with the notice today of the collective bargaining agreement. And we are very concerned because we've heard this over and over again in 2000, 2010. We can't do this because of the CBA. So we are urging you as well to forestall approval of the CPA until these issues can be examined at length. And so necessary changes, for example, in compelling officer testimony, in allowing IPR to do deaths in custody investigations, are incorporated into the new CBA. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have 5 pages of testimony. I would just ask you at your convenience to review that in detail.
Please make sure we've got that, and we'll make sure it's distributed. Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, all. My name is Shannon Kogan, and I am here as a representative of Sisters of the Road. Sisters participated in the stakeholder work group of 2010 to identify recommendations for increasing police accountability and gaining community trust. We come here today to reiterate our previous demands to restore public faith and to take the time to do that. Sisters' community is often harassed by the police for doing nothing more than existing as human beings in public spaces. Our community's rational fear and distrust of the very agency tasked with maintaining the human rights of all will not be lessened by removing public comment from disciplinary appeals or reducing the weight of citizen input in the oversight process. The mission of the Portland Police Bureau includes promoting individual responsibility. Individual officers are not exempt from the need to take responsibility for their actions. Public comment in meetings encourages each officer to be accountable and held to an outside scrutiny for their actions when interacting with the community they exist to serve. Reducing transparency does not fall within the community's demand, nor does it fall within the Justice Department's demands. Portland belongs to all of us, and not just the businesses or the police union. All of us live here and deserve the right to be able to walk down the street in our communities and not be afraid of law enforcement. And we need to be assured that when we have a concern, that concern will be addressed in a meaningful, transparent way. That means that stakeholders who exist outside the relatively powerful structure of the police bureau are well represented in oversight meetings, and the smaller panels reduce the chance of that happening. Those most at risk need to have a strong presence when we are deciding how to hold our police accountable. That is equity. The recommendations which have come out of stakeholder meetings are a step in the right direction. Quickening the dreadfully long oversight process is a priority, but speeding up the process at the expense of community buy-in is not the goal of the Oversight Board either. We at Sisters ask, why take a step backwards now? The makeup of the Oversight Board should be weighted towards citizen involvement, and disciplinary appeals need to be open for public comment. Slowing down the process in the short term would help us best achieve our long-term goals. So let's take the time now.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Okay, next. We are T.J. Browning, Philip Kaka, Mr. W.G. Barnett. And they will be followed by Barbara Ross, Chris O'Connor, and Julie Ramos.
Okay, Ms. Browning, why don't you go ahead while they're getting settled.
Thank you. Hello again. Same discussion, same topic. The four issues I need to talk about. The banning of public comments. I want you to recognize that there's no opposition, not from the police union, and Commissioner Novick, not even from the CRC members who are not paid to sit there and listen to it. They don't oppose the public comment either, but thank you for your comment. The minor complaints going to supervisory, that is just really resonates with me as a disconnect from the Bureau and the citizens they serve. If any of you watched a person, a citizen, go through the process, file a complaint, and go to a hearing because of, this was the example the auditor used on the radio the other day, rude conduct, that might seem minor to the police bureau, and I understand their perspective, but that's part of the disconnect with the citizens they serve. When the citizens want, as does the police force, professional behavior, that flies in the face of the desires from both parties. I believe that if you take it out of the hearing from the citizens and the citizens recognize that their complaints are going to go to the police bureau and not to a citizen body, those complaints are going to diminish. Not the action, the complaints. And that's going to hurt not just the citizens but the police bureau. The reasonable person versus the preponderance of evidence lowers the standards for a police officer. The police officer coming into that hearing is no longer viewed as a professional. We're not asking, is this something that a professional would do with training and experience? We're saying, is this behavior that any reasonable person would do? That's not the same thing. That's not fair to the police officer, nor is it fair to the citizen lodging the complaint. But the worst part of that, and I'm speaking from personal opinion, experience here, when you are sitting on the CRC and you are listening to the pain and concerns of the citizens, and you cannot vote your conscience, you can't even vote what you believe is the correct thing to do because your hands are tied by the reasonable person standard, people resign. I would like to see, in conclusion, it expanded to a 15-person panel and panels of five so we can have diverse people hearing these complaints. I also think you won't have CRC members resigning if they actually get to volunteer and give up that precious time with children and family to actually do something they believe in and the ability to do something they believe in, and it will serve our officers better. The auditor and Constantine made a comment that this system must stand up to outside scrutiny. No, they are so wrong. This process must have the confidence of the public. Otherwise, it's not going to work. It's a big step backwards. Please take your time, stop this now, and please be mindful of the input we're giving.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Good evening.
My name is Philip Chachka, from Portland Cop Watch. Regarding fairness of the proposal, the officers in the process get representation from the union rep or attorney for free. Complainants at the Portland Police Review Board have no knowledgeable advocates available. Appellants have process advisors who cannot advocate. We do appreciate that the complainants may now address the PRB, but they will be virtually alone in the room and mostly filled with police to explain how they think a police officer mistreated them. The appeals process advisor can look at the entire case file, but they can't share the contents with the appellants. Volunteers or paid attorneys are not allowed to look at the case file. Another issue of 8 times officers have appeared on the CRC meetings. There was one time the committee proposed a sustained finding. Arguably, officer input may unduly sway CRC. If all non-disciplinary complaints are routed to the precinct supervisors, unless IPR has to sign off on the outcomes, it will lead to less consistency in how complaints are resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome.
My name is Mr. Barnett. I live in Northeast Portland, and I'm with Cop Watch. The comments I make will many of them compare the August 1st proposal with the current one that was just being reviewed this evening. The August 1 proposal would have allowed CRC to recommend findings based on a preponderance of evidence rather than a deferential reasonable person standard. The current proposal keeps that old standard. The August 1st proposal contemplated CRC hearing appeals on deadly force cases, also since removed. The August 1st proposal indicated there would be a majority of civilians on the police review board. This proposal keeps a 3-2 or 4-3 majority of police personnel, depending on the type of case heard. Looking at the 2010 Oversight Stakeholders Report, there were 41 recommendations made. Only 9 have been implemented, 7 others partially implemented, and 25 not done at all. In 2000 and 2010, when making changes to the oversight system, the city convened public work groups to hash out the details. This process has been flawed in large part because no such dialogue has happened. Among other unresolved issues are giving IPR power to compel officer testimony and investigate deadly force, giving the auditor the ability to consult attorneys who are not also advising the Portland police, giving the CRC power to compel officer testimony and letting counsel hear new evidence. There are other things, and I hear the bell is whistled, but one of the things that hasn't been signed is you have a citizens review committee They don't have access to an independent lawyer, nor do they have staff. So we urge the council to delay the vote. We'd be astonished if Judge Simon or the DOG did not find the city out of compliance because they're not having, because the CRC is unable to meet their unrealistic timeline of holding appeals. At the very least, increase the CRC and the panels and reinstate public testimony and provide better support to the CRC.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now let's hear some more folks, please.
Barbara Ross, Chris O'Connor, and Julie Ramos. And they'll be followed by Christine Malone, Jim Young, and Keosha Ford.
Welcome.
Okay. I'm Barbara Ross, and I'm also from the League of Women Voters. And I just want to emphasize the League's support for a couple of constructive suggestions that we think would improve the process. We fully support the idea of having a task force to look at things more carefully and to consider some of the things that just haven't been resolved by this set of revisions. We would like to see the membership of the CRC increase to 15 so that you could have five-member panels so that if one member wasn't there, you could go ahead with the hearings, and also it would increase the possibility for diversity. If you just have three, then you could have two people with really similar points of view that would overshadow and not really be a balanced approach to the problem. The other suggestion for speeding up the process would be eliminating the conference meeting with the chief if the CRC disagrees with the Bureau's findings, the Bureau's conclusions. And I think that that's just an unnecessary step that is going to make it impossible to meet this 21-day. So in conclusion, I appreciate all the work that's gone into this. There has been some progress made. There's some good things in it. But again, the reasonable person standard of review hasn't been resolved. And so I just think that there are still issues that need to be addressed thoughtfully before you take this action. And I appreciate the hard work you've put into it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Chris O'Connor. I'm speaking as an individual. I'm an attorney who works for the Public Defender's Office. I'm not here representing any particular client or my law firm. I'm here to express my opposition to the removal of the public comment portion of key phases of the oversight process. I have to admit that I'm more cynical than some of the earlier articulate commenters about the whole oversight process. To me, it's sort of arguing about the paint job on a car with no engine. Some want it red, some want it blue, but the thing doesn't run. As someone who's for over a decade been appointed to represent dozens of city residents and citizens each month, all involved in encounters with law enforcement at some part of their legal process, I believe the current oversight process is ultimately rather meaningless in many cases, majority of complainants. While I can't speak for each member of the defense bar, I know the overwhelming majority of the defense attorneys would never advise a client to bother making a complaint unless it was useful for some civil suit later as needing to use up some process. A complaint would be practically meaningless, actually, except for the abstract benefit of having your complaint heard in public. If there is going to be an inevitable outcome in favor of the officer that's questioned or accused of misconduct, the public input is, in fact, the only important part, given the inevitable outcome in which the officer will be exonerated. I'm also concerned about the auditor's rush for efficiency to meet the DOJ timeline. If you want efficiency, just skip to the end. It would only take a couple hours for them to say the officer is exonerated, the complaint's been satisfied, and a letter telling them to knock it off has been done. So this whole process, I'm concerned, is just a rush avoiding the real issues that other people have so much better articulated in terms of actual meaningful oversight, including compelled testimony and oversight onto the larger issues of use of force and death in custody.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Keisha Ford. I'm actually going to read the statements from fellow CRC member and Vice Chair Julie Ramos, if that's okay. So, council members, please consider if this solution really gets at the main issue. What is the main issue? And how has there truly been an analysis of the problems in the system?